a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
It's the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. A very happy Friday to everybody out there. Hope you're doing well. I know this is a very trying time for everybody. So I'm trying to bring you some content, look back at some of the things we've been doing at kslsports.com, where hopefully you're listening to this podcast, and appreciate you tuning in. You can find me on Twitter, if you don't follow me, at Ben's Hoops. Maybe this is your first time listening. If so, I have covered the Jazz for almost 10 years now, kind of hard to believe myself, but been with KSL now for a while. So really fun to be covering the Jazz, even during this bizarre hiatus we're dealing with. And luckily, because the NBA is a global sport and is kind of a year-round sport, even with this hiatus, there's plenty of stuff going on, including with the Utah Jazz. So stick with me today. Got a good show for you. We're going to talk a little bit about some return-to-play scenarios that appear to be popping up in the NBA and where that could happen, how quickly that could happen. I think we might have some good news for you on that front. I think the NBA really wants to get back together and finish this season in one sense or another. So we'll figure out what that looks like. Chris Mannix had a nice article in Sports Illustrated about it. We'll talk a little bit about what it would take to actually get back on the floor. Joe Ingles and Donovan Mitchell both talked about that in the last few days. Kind of coincidentally, they brought it up. So I will talk to you about what that might look like. We'll talk about George Niang's new podcast. He's doing some nice work, and it's fun if you're a Jazz fan to listen to. The new 2K tournament, which Donovan Mitchell's taking part in. Again, the Jazz have been lucky to have a lot of representation in different media settings. During this hiatus, and then we'll talk about a ranking I did where I ranked all 64 Jazz games from this season. So that's all coming up on this edition of the Jazz Notes podcast. Let's start with what I actually think is good news. I think it's unrealistic to expect the NBA to come back and play the final 15 games and that final month of the season that they were planning to, and then having a full 2 months to have the postseason where they run the four rounds, best of seven series. I just don't think that's possible. If you look at their goal is to finish up potentially by Labor Day, they can do that certainly, but they can't do it with a full 3 months that they would require. And that's some of what Chris Mannix, I think, laid out in his latest article at Sports Illustrated. And I'll link to that in the article I'm writing about this podcast at kslsports.com. So make sure you go and check it out. One of the scenarios is going to be and I think it's the most realistic scenario just because there's 30 NBA teams. The opportunity to get 30 cities, or I guess, you know, with a couple of repeating cities, what, 29 cities, to be able to cooperate and feel safe to put 20,000 people in an arena or have players travel to an arena to play in front of no fans, it just seems somewhat unrealistic. So the idea of moving all the teams to one city to do this seems to make the most sense. And of course, for a couple of reasons, Las Vegas seems to be the most logical answer on how to get this season finished and how they could possibly do this. And they've had a ton of success doing this in Las Vegas in the past because of the Las Vegas Summer League and how successful that's been for the NBA. And most of, if not all, the teams in the NBA now go and play in Las Vegas. And that's because between what Rupp Arena and the Thomas and Mack Center, which are literally right next to each other, they share a parking lot, you have two pretty high-level arenas that can house NBA teams. Now, they're certainly not good as any individual NBA arena, but in a pinch, they're more than adequate. And you're probably not needing fans anyway, so it doesn't matter that they only hold, 10,000 people instead of 20,000 people. You're just not going to be selling tickets to these games, most likely. So if you want to finish the games, you want to have them set up to have full media, and really that's probably just going to be broadcast teams or ESPN, TNT, whoever's going to be broadcasting these games. If you want to have access to those two arenas are both well-equipped to do it. And we've seen it in the Summer League how well that's worked out. We know Las Vegas certainly has the hotels available to house 30 NBA teams. So it wouldn't be a stretch to imagine that being possible. And then, not trying to put a scientist hat on that I certainly don't have, but if it's true that this virus is going to have a hard time being transmitted in warmer weather situations and environments, Las Vegas makes sense, especially if you're playing in July or August where it's sweltering. It's just miserable there. So it might be a good way to get those players to get the games back together, and that might be an ideal situation. The one obvious issue becomes that you're going to need the players then to cooperate and make sure that they stay quarantined as best as possible when they're not playing and when they're not together. You just cannot have them going out and enjoying the Las Vegas nightlife if that's trying to get back up and running during the summer, if it's not safe. Because again, if you have one player testing positive or showing signs, you could shut down the whole league again, and you just can't have that happen if you're making this enormous push to move these guys back to Las Vegas. Now, the good news for them is I think the players will understand that every game they play, they save money on their salary. They get more money. So if they're having their salaries risked to get back here and to do this and play in these games, I'm sure they would take it quite seriously that, hey, they don't want to risk further infection. They understand the pain of losing money, of being quarantined, how hard it is to be at home and away from your team. And it sounds like players are certainly antsy to get back out there. And I know the NBA wants to finish the season because there's so much revenue that is going by the wayside right now because of this, that it would be really difficult for them not to get some of these games played, even if it's a third of the season, a tenth of the season as far as games go. Anything that could make them several hundred million dollars, $1 billion, whatever that tournament would look like, would be enormously helpful for the NBA. So I think they're going to push really hard to get it back. And I think playing in front of fans, knowing that you can have, you know, two 15-man teams with a couple of broadcasters and three officials, I think you can actually probably get this done. And I would be somewhat optimistic that the NBA, along with probably Major League Baseball, I think we're probably going to see both of them this summer in some sense, probably without fans to start. Maybe the NBA finishes this season without fans and could even begin next year without fans if this works. But I think it's a good start. I think we're getting a sense of how the NBA is going to try and come back and push this. And actually, this is an idea, and I wrote about this at KSLSports.com, that the NBA is going to be able to watch because the EuroLeague right now is trying to figure out how to finish their season as well. Now, they already play a little bit more tournament-style basketball than the NBA does in their playoff system. It's not seven-game series like the NBA does all the time. They're a little more adept to playing some of that European soccer-style tournament format when it comes to basketball. So they're going to try this as well, apparently. At least it's one of the ideas that they're kind of throwing around, is that they're going to gather all the teams in a city. There's only three cities, I think, in Europe that have two NBA, or I should say professional basketball quality arenas, and they're going to try and get all the teams there, try and quarantine the players, and have them play their tournament as well to get down to their final four and, of course, their championship game. That's going to be one of the things that the EuroLeague's going to try and look at. And the NBA can look at everything Europe is doing, including what they're doing well and what they're doing poorly, whether that's risking players to further exposure or what's going well to allow these players to continue to play and have some semblance of a normal professional life that allows these games to be finished. And if Europe can get ahead of this a little bit quicker than the U.S. has, as we were kind of the last country to be exposed to it, or one of the later countries, I guess, to get exposed to this, hopefully Europe can solve some of the problems that the NBA might otherwise run into that could delay play. So hopefully Adam Silver and the owners can look at that and get it back up and running, because it would be great to have some professional sports back. I know basketball fans are hungry for it. I'm hungry for it. Jazz fans, I know you're certainly hungry for it. And despite all the ups and downs, we'll talk about it at the game rankings coming up here at the end of this podcast. It's been a good year. Jazz are in fourth place in the Western Conference. So it's, you know, I don't know if they're a contender, but who knows what this season's going to look like when everyone comes back from a break. Might be a weird opportunity to go out and make a weird run for a team that is going to rally around itself and rally around each other after kind of being the face of the coronavirus outbreak in the NBA, as the Jazz were on that front line when the game in Oklahoma City got shut down. So let's keep an eye on that. Now, one of the things that is going to complicate this, but realistically could be done in any city, return to basketball, is that you're probably going to need a mini training camp for these guys to come back. There was a report today that Giannis Antetokounmpo doesn't even have a basketball hoop at his house, which is crazy. As much money as he has, you'd think he would have even an outdoor place to shoot around. I honestly don't know what the weather's like in Milwaukee right now, but you would think he would have a place to go and play and shoot around, and apparently he does not. So there's just enough guys who might have a basketball but aren't shooting, aren't getting shots up, and they're going to need to get their rhythm back. And that's something that both Donovan Mitchell and Joe Ingles have talked about in the last few days on different podcasts. Donovan did it with George Niang. Joe Ingles did it a little bit. He was doing an autism awareness meeting with a doctor on NBA's Instagram page on their IG Live. And they said just the amount of time they've been away now, they're going to need a few weeks to get back and get their rhythm and work with their teammates and feel that they're comfortable going back on the floor. I mean, what you can't do is have a bunch of guys go in and start playing competitive games again, cold and blowing out knees or ankles or hamstrings and getting hurt. You're just going to need a little while for these guys to get back into playing shape, even though they're all working out, I'm sure. And the NBA is working with these guys to keep them in shape so they can return to play relatively quickly. They're going to need something, and probably more than just a week. I mean, they're going to need 2 weeks, even if it's not with preseason games. They're going to need something to get themselves back and warm and ready to go. And is that 2 weeks? Is that 3 weeks? When the NBA lockout ended in 2011, in that December, they signed and ratified the new CBA on December 8th. They were playing games, preseason games, by December 16th, so 8 days later. And then they were playing actual games on Christmas Day is when the season opened that year, if you remember. So that was, what, 17 days it ended up taking to get the league totally back up and running. 17 days seems somewhat reasonable. You know, you could have everyone meet up in their home city. The Jazz could probably play at Zions Bank Basketball Center, I would imagine, if they feel like it's a clean area and they have doctors in place that can come in and test the players. And maybe you have to do that daily if we have testing up and running that rapidly and that easy. And hopefully we can get some quick result testing that would say, hey, you're clear to play today and you can go out and work together. And if you can do that in every NBA city, and then fly everyone to Las Vegas and continue daily testing for these players, you might be able to get this back, and hopefully we have large access to testing for everyone, obviously, across the country, in addition to just the NBA players, which we've seen and has been a little bit of a problem so far. So I think that's one thing to keep an eye on as well, is it's not just returning to play. You can't fly everyone into a city day one. These guys are going to need a training camp again, and that's something that both Donovan Mitchell and Joe Ingles mentioned. Now, I told you that Donovan talked about it on the George Niang podcast. He also talked about it a little bit when he did the Jazz playback that they've been doing on AT&T Sportsnet, as they've been showing kind of some of the Jazz classic games. It's been cool to have George Niang's podcast back. George is a pretty natural media guy. He's very talkative. He seems very curious, which I think is a huge plus if you're a media member and probably has a future doing this in the league. But it's a cool opportunity to see how these guys talk to each other, how these guys hang out when they're alone. And it's different than even what the media sees these guys, how they interact. Because when we see them in the locker room, there's 15 players and 30 media members and PR staff and you know, the uniform people. Just there's so many people in those rooms, it's hard to feel like there's actual intimacy. There's some, but there's not true intimacy all the time. So when you get to see George Niang talking to Jordan Clarkson when they're both in their homes, I think that adds a extra level of comfort that allows these guys to open up. And he did it with Donovan Mitchell as well. And I thought you saw a really interesting side of Jordan Clarkson that I think Jazz fans are starting to get to know a little bit. I think Jazz fans know Donovan Mitchell really well because of how public he is and how open he's been for the last three years that he's been in Utah. But seeing Jordan Clarkson open up the way he has, talking about the Good Vibe Tribe, how he came to Utah and just went hiking, went to the Living Room, which is a pretty popular hike here in the state of Utah if you're listening to this podcast out of state. Jordan's just kind of his own guy. He just kind of does his own thing despite having a high-profile life when he was in Los Angeles and then having a very low-profile life, though being on a high-profile team with LeBron in Cleveland, to then coming to Utah. He doesn't seem to necessarily be a guy who needs the spotlight to be happy. He doesn't need the fame to be happy. In fact, he talks about on George Niang's podcast, again, another reason why this is kind of cool, how he just didn't think he was going to be an NBA player. And, you know, he started out at a JUCO level and transferred up to Missouri. Ended up being a very good player at Missouri and played 2 years and got drafted in the second round by the Lakers. But, you know, just taking that pathway to the league has allowed him to kind of not need the fame that I think a lot of NBA players crave, the spotlight that a lot of NBA players crave. And his ability to do that is good, and it makes sense why he's fit so well in Utah. And actually kind of might be the definition of Jazz DNA that you've heard Dennis Lindsay talk about so much of what makes a good Jazz player. And, you know, Quinn Snyder has talked a lot about Jordan Clarkson being passionate. That's one of the things that Jordan Clarkson brings to the game. Whether, you know, he's not an incredibly instinctual defensive player. He's not, you know, Kawhi Leonard, who stole that ball diving backwards, just understanding that, hey, there's a passing lane that only I can get to and the ball's going to go there. So he's going to dive for it. Rudy Gobert is extremely instinctual. Jordan Clarkson's not that guy, but he's passionate about the game, so he plays hard. That's Jazz DNA, liking the game, loving the game, not needing the fame. I think that's partly Jazz DNA, though obviously, you know, Donovan likes the spotlight and handles it very well, and that fits in what the Jazz are doing as well. But I think Jordan Clarkson, maybe more so than anybody would have realized, and certainly I think even more so than the Jazz probably realized, though I know they liked him coming out of college in the draft, has a lot of that Jazz DNA and might have a lot of what allows you to fit here in Salt Lake City and fit in Utah. So I think he might be a long-term piece, and he's going to be a top priority. I would imagine whatever the offseason looks like for the Jazz, I imagine he's going to be a priority to bring back, and they do own his bird rights, so they can go into the luxury tax to sign him, though he is unrestricted, so he can sign a lot of money wherever he wants to sign. He can make money, and it's a bad free agent crop this offseason, so he's going to get some opportunities. I think you'd have to hope that he likes his fit here, he likes his role here, this is the best basketball he's ever played, he's in a good situation, he's got a coach that really believes in him. I think if you're a Jazz fan, you have to really hope that fits. But I'd go watch those George Niang podcasts as well. He's got two of them out. It's called Drive and Dish. You can find them on UtahJazz.com and where they tweet it out. Of course, go to KSLSports.com. I've transcribed a lot of them, written my thoughts on those podcasts and some of the highlights that I pulled out of it. All right. If you want to watch Donovan Mitchell and you want to see some competitive action, you're going to have to get into the world of esports, because that's what Donovan has turned to. Like so many, I don't want to just say NBA players. I think anyone who could be considered a millennial, some older, some younger, have turned to video games to fill their time. And I think that's very natural. And certainly when you're quarantined, I don't know what else you're supposed to do. So good for Donovan Mitchell for being able to do it. But he's going to be playing in this NBA 2K charity tournament, which has 16 NBA players. The tournament actually kicks off tonight. I'm recording this on Friday at about 2 o'clock Mountain Time. It kicks off tonight. Kevin Durant going up against Derrick Jones Jr. is going to be the first game. Donovan actually doesn't play tonight. He's going to play on Sunday, but he's going to play in an extremely high-profile game. In fact, I bet it ends up as the most viewed game, not locally, and certainly not even nationally, but internationally. Donovan's going up against Rui Hachimura, and we don't have a true grasp and how big of a superstar Rui Hachimura is in Japan. He is just beloved there. He's kind of their shining light. Was at Gonzaga, certainly is now that he's in the NBA. And so that's going to get a ton of attention playing online. So that'll be cool for Donovan. He'll gain some new fans for sure. And he's going to have a ton of eyes on him, which is going to be good for his branding. And it's going to be fun to watch. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to actually live tweet it like it's a real game at KSL Sports on Twitter. So make sure you follow us there and interact with me. If you're a 2K player, I've certainly played it in my lifetime. I think you'll recognize a lot of what he's doing. I've seen Donovan playing on Twitch, and he's pretty good. So he might have a chance to actually make a kind of a deep run in this. That would be fun to watch for Jazz fans. To give you a sense of Rui Hachimura, I was at the draft this last year in New York when he got selected by the Wizards. And, I mean, as the night was going on, I've never had this happen. I had several different random Japanese outlets coming in and just saying, hey, do you know anything about Rui Hachimura? I mean, anything. Can you talk to us about Rui? We want to do an interview back in Japan with anyone who's seen him play and anyone who's you know, watched him while he was at Gonzaga or knows how he's going to fit now that he's in Washington. And this was going on all night. So they're just hungry for any content they can get about Rui. So this will be cool. He'll be a very busy stream. It'll be popular. So a Jazz fan should try and take that in and see what that's actually like and how good that's going to be for Donovan Mitchell, who has an enormous national star himself. So that should be a fun game to watch. And again, Donovan's going to be playing Sunday morning. I don't know exactly what time yet. They just released that the Friday night games were going to be played, and Donovan was not on that list. So they didn't do that until just now. Finally, we'll wrap this up. I'm just going to run through really quickly my top 10 Jazz rankings to give you Kind of a nice flavor in your mouth, hopefully on your way out the door as you've been listening to the podcast. We certainly appreciate it. I know it's just a hard time for everybody. It's been hard for us at KSL Sports. We're hanging in there. We've got great bosses, fantastic ownership. Our management's been fantastic and very appreciative to everyone there. But I'm sure if you're listening to this, you know people who have lost their jobs. I certainly do today as well. So it's been a hard day for everyone. So let's look at some of the best games of the Jazz season so far. And I'll just start with number 10. This is when the Jazz come back, or actually I should say fend off the Damian Lillard-led Portland Trailblazers, 117 to 114. The Jazz were not playing all that well in the first half, and Donovan Mitchell ended up really bad in this game. It was not the great matchup when he went head-to-head with Damian Lillard. Dame had 42 points in this game. He had 27 in the first half, and the Blazers had a 14-point first-half lead. I remember sitting at home or sitting at the arena watching this game, and it was just one of those weird lulls for the Jazz where some games they just don't show up this season, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense. I know they're a three-point shooting team, and that's going to lead to some really good results, as we see on this list, and some really bad results, but that was one of those games. And then the Jazz just came out with their hair on fire in the second half, and they held the Blazers to 42 second-half points after giving up over 70 in the first half. And came back and won this game. And this was a couple of days after they'd lost by 17 in Portland. So that was a fun game to go and watch. Again, I've written up this entire list at kslsports.com. Good to see the Jazz get that victory. Jazz beating the Nets in Brooklyn was my number 9 game, 118 to 107. This was the 10th win in that Jazz 10-game winning streak when it seemed like they could just do absolutely nothing wrong. Donovan Mitchell had missed the previous game against the Washington Wizards. He came back, scored 25 points. Joe Ingles had the game where it looked like he was finally going to break past his 27-point career high. He had, I think, 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter to do it. And for some reason, Joe Ingles just gets stuck at 27 and can never get past it. And certainly that was the case again. But Joe was brilliant in that game. And it was kind of when Jazz fans were recognizing how good they are when the Jazz are playing well. And that's going to be key to getting Joe Ingles back coming up this summer. I've talked a lot about how tired I thought Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell are this year, having played summer basketball. That includes Joe Ingles as well. You know, Joe, I think Joe's had some really bright spots, and I think he burned a lot of gas, a lot of energy when he got moved into the starting lineup and has trailed off as we were creeping into this hiatus. Getting Joe Ingles back and playing at a high level, if this break helps him, could make the Jazz honestly contenders in the tournament or whatever this finish to this season looks like if they can get it going back in Vegas. Number 8, this game was fun because it seemed like everyone in the country was watching. It was when the Jazz took on the Mavericks here in Salt Lake City. Luka Doncic had the big first quarter. Kristaps Porzingis was kind of stifled throughout, but everybody was watching this game because it was an early tip. It was a Saturday game, it was an early tip, but the NBA did this so you could see, if you lived in Europe, Doncic, Kristaps Porzingis, Rudy Gobert, you could see some of the biggest international stars in the world playing at a more reasonable time. I mean, it's still 11 o'clock in Europe, but at least it's not 3 a.m., you know, 4 a.m. in the morning. You had a chance to watch this game, so there was a ton of national media watching this game, and the Jazz had that bad first quarter. Doncic had, almost a double-double in the first quarter, and then the Jazz came back late, held with the Mavericks, and of course, maybe the best defensive play we've seen of Rudy Gobert's career, in all honesty. He blocks DeLon Wright as he breaks away from the rim and actually turned Gobert around. Gobert blocked the ball off the glass to preserve the Jazz lead and get the victory. Number 7, Jazz outlasts the 76ers in Salt Lake City. This was the game where Ben Simmons went out in the first quarter with that injury, and certainly that helped the Jazz get the win. But it was early in the year. The Jazz were playing pretty good basketball, but not fantastic basketball. And it was when I think one of the first times we saw that, hey, Bojan Bogdanovic is going to be just a fantastic fit on this team. He really outplayed Tobias Harris, who was the other Jazz target this offseason. And the Jazz got the win in that one, 106 to 104. Jazz entered the All-Star break, coming in at number 6 with a big win over the Miami Heat. It was interesting listening to Eric Spoelstra before this game talk about how whenever the Heat come to the Salt Lake, they play well through three quarters and they trail off in the fourth quarter. And the Heat were really outplaying the Jazz, I thought, through most of the game, including being up by 5 at halftime. The Jazz were down. It looked like, okay, this might be an ugly finish to the first half of the year before they go to the All-Star break. And sure enough, just like Eric Spoelstra predicted, Miami kind of cashed their chips in. They gave up as they were getting ready for the All-Star break. The Jazz ended up running away with it, 106 to 101. That was a good win. Jazz beat the New Orleans Pelicans. Remember, this was the controversial finish with the Rudy Gobert block foul against Brandon Ingram on that coast-to-coast layup late in the game. You had Brandon Ingram go off against the Jazz, which he has done basically every game this season. He had a huge performance, as did Donovan Mitchell, but Rudy Gobert blocks a shot at the rim late, even though it was a foul, to preserve the Jazz victory, 128-126. Coming in number four, Jazz beat the Celtics in Boston 99-94. This actually happened, three games before the quarantine happened, before the league was suspended. Jazz on the road. Yeah, they were playing against a shorthanded Celtics team that didn't have Jaylen Brown, but this was just a week after the Jazz lost here in Salt Lake City to the Boston Celtics. You remember Jason Tatum and Donovan Mitchell were going head-to-head in that great matchup. Went on the road. Donovan Mitchell again wasn't playing well in this Boston game. Jazz hadn't been playing well, and then they went and won all four games in a row on this East Coast road trip. And Mike Conley stepped up, and it was good to see Mike Conley kind of step in and have a huge game. Conley had 25 points in that game, shot really well from the floor, and actually I just thought was the best player on the floor. He looked like the smartest player on the floor. He had a ton of steals that game. He showed you why point guards are still valuable in the NBA, just understanding pace and how to control a game. I thought that was fantastic. Coming in number three, Jazz beat the Rockets. Of course, we remember this game. This is the Bojan Bogdanović Sunday night performance, that going head-to-head with the Oscars, I should say, in the Academy Awards. Bojan Bogdanović hits the big three after P.J. Tucker hits the corner three to send the Jazz over the Rockets. That's a game that's going to be played back on AT&T Sportsnet here in the next couple weeks, I believe. So keep an eye out for that. But maybe the best shot of the Jazz season so far. I mean, I don't think that's actually all that hard to argue. Getting the shot up over James Harden and P.J. Tucker late was pretty fantastic. Number two, Jazz beat the Milwaukee Bucks 103-100. Another Bojan Bogdanović game winner. He beat him in the corner. I had forgotten some of these games going back and watching the highlights just because, you know, there's 82 games a year and have been 64 so far. You kind of forget small stretches. And Bojan Bogdanović's stretch in the third and fourth quarter there was really his big coming out party here in Salt Lake. Not only did he hit the game winner, but he had just an absurd second half. He just repeatedly torched whoever the Bucks threw at him. They tried to put Brook Lopez on him at one point, and he crossed him up and dunked on him. He was hitting crazy threes. Kind of looked like Kyle Korver, just running like a madman, coming off screens, catching the ball, throwing it up as soon as he could get it. And you kind of started to see, hey, this Bojan fit with Utah is really going to be special. That was one of the best performances we saw all year. And then number one, this game just kind of came and went. It was a big win, but it was kind of early in the year. It was in between Christmas and New Year, so I don't think it's kind of gotten the attention it deserves. But the Jazz went on the road and beat the Los Angeles Clippers with both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and beat them soundly. They beat them 120-107. Donovan Mitchell was absolutely incredible in the fourth quarter. He had 30 points in the game. That's superstar stuff. You know, when your best player is in his third year and goes on the road and beats the reigning finals MVP and a player of Paul George's caliber who everyone was just assuming was going to make the Clippers a contender, and they are this year, for the Jazz to go into that game against a mostly healthy, not fully healthy, but mostly healthy Clippers team, and the Jazz didn't have Conley, so it wasn't like the Jazz were at full strength, and get that win while holding Paul George and Kawhi Leonard to just 39 points on 44 shots. I thought that was by far the Jazz most impressive game of the season. You can find that entire list at kslsports.com. Again, I'm going to be tweeting it out from Ben's Hoops, kind of links to all these articles I'm talking about here in this podcast. But I appreciate you tuning in. Went a little bit longer than I expected, but hopefully if you're mowing the lawn this weekend, which really seems unfair, if you're in a quarantine, you can't go out. I don't think you should have to do yard work, but it might be a nice way to get out of the house if it warms up this weekend, which it's supposed to. We appreciate you tuning in to the podcast. Find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. Read me at kslsports.com. We'll be back with you again next week. Should have some fun podcasts planned. So stick around, and good luck to everyone out there.